You're listening to the Pinto and White Shadow Show on KFGO.com and 740thefan.com.
Standing in line to see the show tonight, and there's a light on.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 030 podcast of the Pinto and White Shadow Show here on KFGO.com and, of course, on iTunes. The Pinto and White Shadow Show can be found there. I'm Daniel Pinto Gunderson, my co-host Brad the White Shadow Jones, ready to talk all types of topics when it comes to sports, local, regional, and national, as well as your questions, your comments, given to us via email, pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com, or on the comment section underneath the podcast that we post usually every Monday or every Tuesday on KFGO.com under the Pinto and White Shadow Show. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter. You can find me at PintoKFGO. You can find my co-host, Brad Jones.
At the Bison Guy.
Follow us there. Facebook. Like we said, we post these things all the time on 790. We post them on Brad's, on mine, on 740 The Fan as well, just to get it up there and out there so you can discuss, listen, and kind of talk about what we talk about on a weekly basis. Super Bowl 48, Brad Jones, best food that you had for your Super Bowl party. What was it?
Yeah, we were talking before the show. We had a lot. I went over to my dad's, and he did not short us on the food. We had fresh fish fillets, so I don't know if it was walleye or perch, but it was good.
So there's a little health in that.
We had ribs. Not as much health in that.
No.
We had wings. Also
no
not as much health,
no health
in that.
No health in that.
Cheeseburger soup that my stepmom made.
Ooh, that sounds good.
It was good. Then there were dilly bars. There were chocolate chip cookie bars.
Ooh.
And Scotcheroos.
So what was the favorite out of all that?
Man. That fish is really good. It's
really
hard to go against. Yeah, I can't go against
shore
it.
Shore lunch kind of fish?
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yep.
That's where it's at. I was at a party where there was a lot of things. My fiance makes these unbelievable little weenies that she wraps in bacon and then puts in this horseradish like barbecue type sauce. It's so good.
Okay.
Yeah, that was good. There was barbecues there. There was two types of cheese dip.
Okay.
There was this one of the attendees brought these, like, I don't know how to explain them, but it was the spinach dip, but they were baked into like a little like bread bowl. And they were like little muffins, and they were unbelievable. Huh. It was unbelievable. She also had some mushrooms that she brought with, not like drugs, but like sautéed mushrooms. Not sautéed. What's the a garlic kind of appetizer type mushroom? What's the word I'm thinking of here? I can't think of the word. They have them on at restaurants across the country. Portobello mushrooms. Thank you. That's what they were. I couldn't think of the word.
Okay.
Brought that. That was delicious. But by far, those the little weenies and the spinach dip in the little bread. I don't even know what it was called, but it was amazing. It was almost like a puff,
okay,
if you will.
I like that.
It was so good.
Yeah, I kind of made my, after kickoff when the food started getting done, I pretty much had decided I was just going to eat the entire game and just not stop.
Oh. See, I would,
and I was pretty successful in my goal there.
And see, I ate a lot, but I just don't like react well, especially if I don't process it out and then take care of it. And I just didn't
process it out. My God.
Well, you know, go for a run or something else.
I thought
whatever.
You were going a different direction.
No, I wasn't. Maybe I am. Maybe I'll let the listeners decide what direction I'm going. But regardless of that, yeah, it was. It was some good Super Bowl eats. Only had a couple beers, nothing too crazy.
I went ginger ale. I'd been out for the UFC fight the night before, so I decided to go a little easy on it.
And that wouldn't have been a bad idea on my part. I probably should have went ginger ale also. But I went a couple beers, a couple glasses of water, stayed well hydrated.
That a kid? And
yeah, it was a awful game to watch
if
you're a spectator or a sports fan. But, you know, we got through. Favorite commercial? I'll just say this. Anything Tim Tebow related, you can leave. If you like Tim Tebow at all when it comes to that stuff, it was...
Those were actually entertaining. I'm not into the whole Tebow mania. Those were... I mean, he poked a little fun at himself there, so I didn't mind those. Gosh, I have one, and it's completely blanking right now.
Mine was the Radio Shack one.
That was up there. Anytime you see a 97-year-old Hulk Hogan waddling his way across the screen, that's always relatively entertaining.
Yes. Yes, it was.
Yeah, that one was up there. Colbert was pretty good in the couple
of
spots.
Yeah, the pistachio one, yeah, that was all right.
That was pretty good.
Everybody's up in arms about the Coke one, which I didn't even, like, it didn't even register on my mind because they sang America the Beautiful in different languages.
And
yeah, people are just losing their minds, and it just never registered.
It did to me, and I kind of figured there'd be some reaction to it, but whatever.
Yeah, people are dumb. In all honesty, those people who have issues with that are just stupid.
I mean, I don't get it. Yeah,
yeah, I don't get it either. Trying to think if there was any other good ones.
I mean, the time machine one. The Doritos time machine one was cute. The Chevy truck one with the bull was pretty good.
I thought that was dumb.
It was kind of, but it was funny.
Yeah, it was all right. Yeah. I don't know. It didn't. The one with the kids where they had the bag of Doritos and they had to get out of the car and the kid jumped on the dog, like the younger of the two.
Oh, that was one of the good ones. Speaking of the dog, what was it? The
beer commercial with the puppies?
No, the one with the mixed breeded dog. What was it called? Was it a German Shepherd mixed with a Chihuahua? It looked like Scrappy Doo.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I caught that one late.
That one entertained me. That was pretty good. The Dober Wawa. That's what it was. It was a Doberman and a Chihuahua. The giant Doberman head on this little Chihuahua body. And it looked like a mixture of Scrappy Doo and when the dog in the movie The Mask with Jim Carrey got the mask on. It looked like some combination of those two. It's good stuff.
The question would be if we had, what was it, $4 million this year?
Yeah.
To advertise this podcast.
Okay.
What would our 30 second spot be?
We are off the rails here. 30 second spot to advertise this podcast. I mean,
now I would include
a little jumping bean and some dude from the old TV show The White Shadow?
No, we don't go that because nobody would get that reference. What we do, here's my thought. Here's what I'm throwing $4 million at.
Okay.
We get just unbelievably gorgeous looking actresses.
I'm all in. I don't care where this is going.
Exactly, right? So you just get a bunch of these really good actresses to just read a liner.
Okay.
Talk about you and talk about me and just explain maybe how good we are and you should listen to our podcast. But I'm talking everybody's favorite and just have it be like a medley. You know, don't just have, say, one of my favorites is Anna Kendrick. Don't have it just be Anna Kendrick. Have it be...
Bringing like Scarlett Johansson,
yes.
Jessica Alba.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Julie Bowen from Modern Family.
Okay.
Love me some Julie Bowen. You go.
A little Emmanuel Shrieky in there.
Yes. Oh, yes. From Entourage.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
And just have them say those things or don't even have them say anything.
Okay.
At all.
We better get moving before you end up divorced before you're married.
Yeah, right. But I mean, you could just have them stand there and maybe just hold up like photos of us or maybe we could just... We should show up in the commercial.
I was gonna say, come on now.
We have to be in that commercial.
Okay.
Okay. So that is my idea for Super Bowl. Let's work on it. Probably $5 million for budget because I'm sure next year it'll go up another million.
Well, four is average, so maybe we can get by with three even.
Good point.
Thank you.
How are we going to pay these actresses? Favors. We'll put them on the podcast.
That's how
we'll pay them.
Pay them podcast.
Yeah, exactly. That'll be your exposure. So, all right, let's get to
local.
And to start things out today, we'll talk NDSU basketball.
Yes.
Do we need to get worked up over NDSU's 67-63 loss to the Denver Pioneers over the weekend?
Well, seeing as we both predicted it on last week's podcast.
I think I said they'd win.
No, I'm pretty sure we both said that I said I thought they'd lose. Yeah, you did say they'd win all three of the South Dakota State, USD, Denver swing.
Yes.
I said they would lose to Denver. So I thought this would happen. I thought they'd drop one of those three games. I thought it would be that one. They
almost
did.
Dropped the USD one.
Almost, but again.
Came with the win.
It's tough to win on the road in conference. They always drop. Go back, look at the Woodside Winkleman teams. I feel like a parrot because it seems like I say it every week.
Yes.
It's just going to happen. The big one that they need, they got two, maybe three left on their calendar that's circled. Obviously, IPFW. yep. SDSU, and the Denver. Return Denver. Yes. I think those are the three that you take a look at. But no, I'm not concerned by that. Honestly, if you're the one or the two seed, to me, this year, not a huge...
Well, it is a huge deal because the one seed gets the bye. Because there's there's only seven teams.
Okay.
There's only seven teams in the Summit League this year because Omaha doesn't get in.
Okay.
So there's eight, but there's only seven that make.
Okay.
So the number one seed.
I'm pretty sure there are eight. Okay. That makes sense.
The number one seed does get a bye. So it is a bigger deal than it has been in years past.
I'll give you that. I still think this team should be the favorites either way. But yeah, that does make it a little bit bigger deal if you can get a night off.
But here's the thing is that NDSU back when they, and this will forever be compared to the 08-09 team.
Every NDSU basketball team from here on out will.
Unless this team goes on and does what that team did, and then it will be compared to that one, and then so on and so forth.
I still think every team gets compared to that team unless or until you win a game in the tournament. I think that's what turns the conversation.
Here's why the Denver loss isn't so horrible. Denver is a good team.
Yep.
They're just getting their feet wet in the Summit League. B, Denver's 4-3 in the conference. So just because you lost doesn't mean that, oh boy, there it is, we're now in third place, whatever have you. It's you're still technically two games behind Fort Wayne, but now Fort Wayne, their schedule changes a little bit because now they have to go on the road to South Dakota State. They have Denver, I believe, comes to their place later in the season, and I'd have to check that out. And then you also have the fact that you have to go to NDSU as well. Yep. So Denver's got, or Fort Wayne's got a possibility, even with the two-game lead technically. Their tougher part of the schedule now starts. NDSU's easier part of the conference schedule, league schedule, if you will.
Five of their last seven are home.
Right.
So NDSU just begins. Should be able to do some damage.
Exactly. So this weekend, big weekend for NDSU because they have IUPUI and Fort Wayne. But let's not get all worked up over this loss. Now, I'm looking at the stats here. NDSU has, you know, you look back at some things, to me, they just weren't ready against Fort Wayne, and the points in the paint really kind of showed that. Here is where I find the biggest error for NDSU in this game. You look at their free throw shooting.
Yeah, that was not good.
In the second half alone.
Yeah.
It was a 4-point loss. They were 11 of 19 from the line.
Yep.
They're a really good free throw shooting team this year. Somewhere in the 70s, I want to say percentile when it comes, or percentage points, I should say, from shooting free throws. And to only make 60% and 58% in the second half, no, that's not good. So that was not good. Marshall Bjorklund, he had an all right game, 10 points. But 27 minutes. That's not good with four personal fouls. And I believe two of those came quickly in that game against Denver.
It just changes the way you play.
It does. Especially for NDSU. It truly does. Taylor Braun had a huge opening to the game, but then kind of petered out a little bit. Lawrence Alexander, now while 5 of 10, he was 7 of 8 from the stripe. He had a very good game, but 5 turnovers.
Yeah.
5 of the team's 15.
15, yeah.
Right, and it's a good defensive team. I want my teams to be within 13 to 10 turnovers a game.
Yeah, we go over that. 15's not good, but it's not egregious.
Right, especially when you're talking about a team like Denver who's built
but
their
again,
team off
on
of
the road,
turnovers.
You can't do it.
No, you can't.
Yep.
And you got to be able to trust a guy like, you know, L.A., who, again, 5 turnovers in 40 minutes, that's not horrible, but it's still something where you go, you're losing a possession in a game where possessions are highly needed. And 15 turnovers, you just can't have it. So there are things here for NDSU. They shot well at 48%, shot very well from three-point line at 42%. All the second half, they were 3 of 9. All 6 of their three-pointers came from either Taylor Braun or Lawrence Alexander, which is not good. Mike Felt was, again, we'll go back to it. Their bench needs to get a little bit better. Mike Felt just disappeared in this game, played 5 minutes, picked up one foul, took one shot. Now, I know that Taylor Braun came into the USD game a little bit under the weather. And since these guys are spending every waking minute together between practices, airplanes, bus trips, and games, something like that probably has an opportunity to make its way around the team. Whether it's a flu bug or maybe a cold, whatever, maybe it made it to Felt. And I didn't get a chance to listen to the game. I was moving around working on other things on Saturday. But those things happen that can affect your game. It's not a horrible loss, but it's a loss that you go, okay, we can correct, we can get better, make free throws. Again,
make free throws,
make free throws, and you'll be okay. Now, moving forward, looking at NDSU's schedule down the stretch, like you said, five of their next seven games at home. I know they've put themselves in a tough spot by losing to Denver. Not totally undoable, but it's a tough spot. I think they have to win out in order to get that number one seed. And I know that's their thinking because they're not going to go, hey, we can lose one here, we'll be okay. They're going, we have to win out now.
Yeah.
And we have to make sure, we just have to take care of us, because if we went out, then we've got the one game back with Fort Wayne, and then the pressure's on them because they can't lose another one. But if we went out, we're good. So take care of yourself. Which, I mean, obviously it's what everybody's going to say, but from our perspective, I think that's exactly what they have to do in order to get that number one seed. Do you, yes, no?
Yeah, I don't really have anything to add to that. Yeah, I think they got to do it.
Will they do it?
Probably not. Numbers would suggest no.
Okay, what team are they going to lose to on the schedule then when you look at it? I'll give you three. Oh, the three that we talked about, SDSU, Denver, or Fort Wayne. Those three games, which one do you see most likely being an upset? Or an upset or a loss. I shouldn't say upset, but a loss.
Ah, gosh, I don't really want to. You're going for the music, I see. Thanks. If you made me pick, I'd probably say IPFW, but I just, again, it sometimes those games surprise you, where it just kind of comes out of nowhere a little bit.
They lost to Southern Utah.
Yeah, it just it
back
happens.
In 08-09.
And to lose nine, or to win, what, 7, 8, 9 straight games that they'd have to?
Seven.
It's asking a lot.
Before that Denver loss, they had won 14 of the last 16 ball games.
Yeah.
Losses on the road to Fort Wayne and Ohio State.
Yeah.
They've been on a pretty decent streak, and this year at home has been outstanding. They're 7-1 at home. 5 of the next 7. Omaha, to me, would be the one where they lose. I think they win at home. I think they win out at home. I think that after watching that Western Illinois game and how the crowd responded really came out, they've got a couple afternoon games in here, especially against South Dakota State and Fort Wayne, the two most important opponents. And I think people will be interested and curious to see what Denver's like on a March Saturday night game.
What's the date on that one?
March 3rd. Okay. March 1st, pardon me. Those are going to be big, well-attended games. And despite the many misgivings that we have about the BSA, which there are quite a few, the crowd can really make it feel like a hostile environment.
It holds a lot of people. Yes. I mean, if nothing else, it holds a lot of people.
It can make it feel like it's a hostile environment. And for a team like Denver who hasn't been to the BSA before.
Yeah, same thing that came up with. Which is why I didn't say Denver on there, because it's a new place for them too.
Yes. So that's why I think Omaha, judging by the way they've played this year, they've played very well against teams where you're going, why are they winning here? How are they doing this there? They could be a team that could surprise you at home. Same thing with USD. Omaha and USD I put in the same category. NDSU's lucky they're going to avoid Omaha in the Summer League tournament when they get there. So those are our takes on the men's team. I want to talk a little bit about the women's basketball team. Just because Brooke Lamar, Summer League Player of the Week, ended up with 33 against Denver on Saturday, got the NDSU women's basketball team to a victory. Now, that for this women's basketball team is one of the, two wins so far this season. They're still the 7th seed when they go into the Summit League tournament, tied with South Dakota there at the bottom at 2-5 in the Summit. However, they would avoid South Dakota State. They would play IUPUI or Fort Wayne at this point. Brooke Lamar had 33 points against Denver. Is she the type of player, Brad, that you look at, because it is basketball and one player can make that much of a difference, that could get you past a Saturday-Sunday game on the weekend of the Summit League tournament? Is she that good in your mind?
No.
Why not?
It's so hit or miss. I mean, I've watched her. I've gone to the BSA. I've watched her play 3-4 times now. And granted, I didn't make it there Saturday, so maybe the trick is I just need to stay away. But there's got to be some things that work in your favor when you're the height that she is, to be able to score that much. I mean, you have to hit your jumper, and you have to hope that the other team's post defense is not going to be good, and they're not going to be playing a team in the first round of the Summit League tournament that's going to have that many holes. The player that I've seen at her height in recent women's basketball years that could do that was Kevi Looper, and Kevi Looper was ridiculous. I mean, she was just a phenomenal player. So quick, great jumper, quick release. And I just don't think Brooke Lamar is quite that dynamic. Very good player. But as far as being enough to carry the team to a win against a much better team in a conference tournament, I don't see it, no.
Now, the beautiful thing about all of this is IUPUI and South Dakota State are going to be the 1 and 2. Just matter of which spot sure. they're going to be in. There's a lot of things to still get figured out in that middle pack. NDSU avoids the 7, which everybody's going to try and do. Obviously, they have a shot at maybe being a 6, taking on a 3. The 3 team right now is Fort Wayne. Denver and Western Illinois are right there in the middle of the pack. I mean, if she gets to a matchup, and I agree with you, that things, all these things have to go right. She was 12 of 19 from the field in order to score 33 points. A lot of things have to go right.
And that's and you say, can a player do it? Well, sure.
Is Brooke Lamar the player that can do it?
She's the only one on the team that can, yes, but I don't think she will. I think the odds of it happening in the Summit League tournament are really, really low, because if you're doing scouting and you've got a week to scout NDSU, it's guard Brooke Lamar, because I don't know that anyone else can beat you.
It's a good point. They're a little weak in the roster spot across the board. Brooke Lamar has been a pleasant surprise, albeit a little bit inconsistent, but when she's a shooter at that size, she's going to be one of these players that, you know, she's got to take a lot of shots, high volume to get the points she does. 19 shots on Saturday, 33 points in victory over Denver. Good win for them, second win of the conference. A lot of things have to go right for this NDSU women's team in order to get that victory past that first-round weekend. The other thing, too, she had 8 assists.
Yeah.
So she wasn't the only one. I mean, she was able to dish out the assists, too, but she needs a game like that in the Summer League tournament in order to get past the weekend. All right. We'll keep it NDSU. We'll talk NDSU football. Signing day is Wednesday.
By the way, one of my least favorite days of the year. Can I get a Debbie Downer? Because I think it's ridiculous.
Why?
To put the whole spectacle that is recruiting, I think, is just so overblown. And I just don't care to be given this huge press conference. We wonder why. And I know I'm being Captain Buzzkill here, and that's fine. But we wonder why athletes in general have the attitudes that they have of, oh, I can get away with anything. Well, here's where it starts, is when you're doing press conferences and you're devoting entire programs to where a student's going to school.
Well, that's for the big-time schools, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't see – I don't know if how many local television channels, I could be wrong, are going to be hosting, you know –
I understand that, but even being able to Google your name and see all these wonderful things that are being said about you, and we know nothing about these student athletes. Nothing.
You know the basics, like 40 time and what they can bench press, stuff like that.
Well, we've talked about how much that means.
It's true.
I mean, you have no idea, and we're going to say, oh, you're going to hear all these things about how every single one of them is a great kid, and how, you know, they've got all this potential, they're going to do all these things, when in reality, unless you hit the mother load like NDSU did with their recruiting class,
the two years that just graduated. And the one before, or after it.
It just doesn't happen.
So let's parlay this into a different question. Do you like the NFL draft at all?
The NFL draft... not as much as I have in recent years, honestly.
Because I would beg to argue, what's the difference? You're just seeing a bunch of kids that play college football, and several of them against teams that had no business being on the same field as this person. You have no idea how they're going to do at the next level. It's the same thing. It's a crapshoot, if you will, that you talk about when it comes
That's
to recruiting,
true, but
as it is with
the
NFL draft.
The difference with the NFL draft is... I've at least seen these players play.
Really?
And people.
How many? 70% of the Seattle Seahawks roster was made up of players after the fourth round.
I have the opportunity to see those play. Now, just because they're after the fourth round doesn't mean they're not at an LSU or an Alabama.
Correct.
Or a big-time
but would you
school.
Remember their name?
I don't watch much college football beyond NDSU, so I'm probably the wrong person to ask that.
The reality is that both of these things, recruiting and the NFL, are a little bit of a crapshoot. I give more credit for these kids being somewhat at least basking in the limelight for a little bit, because they may never get another shot to be as hyped as they are when they go to college, signing a big, you know, contract. I don't want to say contract, it basically is a contract, but a letter of intent to go to the school. The other part of it is, too, a lot of these guys are from small towns, you know, and so this is their one in time, and this is a community event, and it's big for the school where they're going to have one Division I athlete every 15 to 20 years, if that, you know? So it's exciting for them. It's exciting for the kids, exciting for the family to say, hey, I get to continue my education and my football career at put in the school. So I'll give them credit for that. To me, the NFL draft is just a way for the NFL to expose himself to more fans. They've done
sure,
it correctly.
Absolutely.
But again, it's the same thing. It's Roger Goodell going to walk up to the stage and read a name. Woo! Yeah, Johnny Manziel.
Sure.
He's going to have so many yards for us.
Yeah.
No, how do you know? He could be awful. Yeah. I mean, Russell Wilson was like a third-round draft pick.
Yes.
Nobody thought he would go that high in the meantime either. I mean, people were writing him off because he was too short. It just, to me, the whole thing, the NFL draft and recruiting, there is a difference there, and I understand where you're coming from. But
And to me, the difference is you're going to be a professional athlete when you go through the NFL draft. I mean, you're going to college.
Yeah.
NFL draft, how many, you know, there's what? 32 teams, 53 roster spots.
Yeah.
There's how many hundred college football teams and how many, and you know, how many
scholarships
people on the
per, yeah. No, I understand where you're coming from, but to me, I think it's more of you got to think of it as a community event when it comes to these kids. There's a guy that was going to go to NDSU, a wideout, decided that he's probably going to sign with Western Illinois on Wednesday. It's a big deal in the community because first time since I want to say 89.
Okay, in the high school community is fine, but that's not where the perspective I'm coming from. I'm coming from somebody who watches every NDSU football game, and I just it's a name on a piece of paper.
Are you getting more after the fans getting all hyped about it, or are you getting more after the fact that sometimes the programs will hype it more than anything? Because I'll give you the.
Oh, I don't think the programs really hype it.
I don't think the programs hype
it at all.
So then you're getting after the fans. Or are you getting after
them? Yes, I'm getting after the fans and the media.
Okay.
Is who I'm getting after with it, yes.
Because I will argue with you about, with schools like Alabama and stuff like that, these kids are 4- or 5-star recruits. It's a little bit of a bigger deal. When it comes to NDSU, and I've done my fair amount of research, I know.
Okay, has your research involved watching these kids play?
Yes.
Okay, how many
like
of them?
On video and stuff, all
okay.
of them.
Okay, that's fine then. I'll give you a little bit of credit for that if you've done that. But I don't think that's the majority of people. Or if
no, I don't.
Or if you've seen it, you've watched a highlight reel of it. Guess what? I could make a highlight reel of myself in basketball, and I could look pretty darn good on a highlight reel.
Right. No, I understand that. Plus, it involves me talking to the coaches of the players and understanding that, yeah, that's one-sided. I get that. But at least he's going to have some idea of, okay, he's really good in the pocket. He tends to run more than he should, and he's not going to have that work at NDSU because it's a different level. He's a dedicated kid. A lot of these guys, which it speaks
well. But a coach is never going to say anything bad because you know what a coach wants to have said? Hey, I guess look where I sent a kid to.
Right.
Look where my player went.
And it all works in that way.
I'd be more interested to talk to their teacher or the equipment manager or somebody like that. I think you get better information out of them. You're obviously not going to do that.
What's a teacher going to tell you about football?
I think because all these kids are supposedly good at football. We don't know how good they're going to be.
Right.
But they're good enough to a certain level. I want to know what kind of people they are. And I think you're going to get more out of that based on what they do from somebody who doesn't have as much stake in it as a coach.
See, to me, it's just you got to enjoy the moment. When it comes to them being how good of a citizen they are, if they're a good citizen, that's going to come up before you come to a school like NDSU.
Really?
NDSU, yes, because
really?
Okay. NDSU at this point, and really these schools at the FCS level, taking a flyer, and let's put it this way. At the FCS level, NDSU taking a flyer on a kid with a bad background is limited, especially since, boy, what was it, the Best Buy ring, whatever that was, that included a handful of NDSU players.
Yep.
And you have to remember, every kid has a bad judgment call once in a while. And these are kids still. I mean, they're still young men, but they're kids. And I get that, oh, yeah, they have to have responsibility. Everybody makes mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. So, yes, I get it. But as far as being good citizens, I think NDSU does their research in that regard. When's the last time that NDSU's had a really
we're getting way off the rails here.
You've taken it to this direction.
I don't like this glorification of, you know what, we are going to stand and applaud you putting a hat on. I don't get it. And then I get to make some big deal, and I'm being told by everybody that I'm the best thing in the world because I can play football. Yeah, we put a premium on sports. We love sports, and that's fine. But, I mean, just maybe this is more a comment on society than it is anything else.
Well, okay, but if you don't want it to be a big deal, then don't go to football games. Don't give them the coverage that they have. Don't give them the TV contracts. Don't give them any of that stuff. If you don't want it to be a big deal,
I think the games are fine, but I think the recruiting side of it, that's – to me, that just, I don't know. It just.
But you're recruiting the kid to be played in the game, which is a big deal. So the kid being recruited feels like a big deal because he's going to the program that's made football this big deal, if you will. To look at it and go, well, we shouldn't treat it as such, then it starts from the top. It starts from the university standpoint. And if you want to look at it that way, then you don't recruit. You just go, okay, we're just going to have kids come in. We're going to have them walk on. We're just going to have them try out. We're going to field a football team.
See, again, I don't put this on the schools because you know what the schools do? They have one press conference where they read the names, basically, and allow a few questions about it, and they say, hey, these guys are great kids. They're
right.
Going to do well. The schools don't put this on. It's the fans and it's the media that all of a sudden are putting all of this on a high school student. You want to talk about a kid. A high school student is a kid.
Yeah.
And you're putting all of this spotlight on them. I think it's early. I just think it's too early for something like that. And it's just a little much too soon for me.
Well, NDSU has done a good job of getting in kids that can handle this spotlight. And really, something that they've done well is they've gotten production out of young players. And more so early on than in the last few years because of how good the roster is. But do you think, Brad, with these freshmen, I'm not going to read off a list because it would be pointless. And I agree with you because, I mean, I could tell you what I've been told, tell you what I've seen. But in the end, it's the same thing the way I feel about the NFL draft,
sure.
Which is where we meet, is you don't know until they put on the pads.
Yes.
So I'm not going to give you names, especially at this level, because 3-stars, 2-star recruits – a lot of them are going to be people that you take shots on, that he was a little bit too slow, he was a little bit too small, he wasn't big enough, whatever. You don't know how they're going to develop. A lot of potential is taken with these kids. However, position-wise, do you see, Brad, a position out there that a incoming freshman could have an impact on right away?
I do see one. And in general, I mean, you don't see that a lot, especially with the success NDSU has had. You see a lot of red shirts out of freshmen
right. When
you're at that point. The one I see is running back.
Really?
I mean, I think that if there's any position that NDSU's a little thin at right now, Chase Morlock ran the ball well in garbage time last year. But after that, I mean, with Sam Ojeri leaving, there's the possibility that they could be a little thin at running back and that a guy could come in early on and get some playing time and some meaningful snaps.
Well, here's the benefit that they have. John Crockett obviously is going to be the number one guy coming into camp, but they have a guy that transferred in from the University of Nebraska, King Frazier.
Yep.
You can say that he's from the University of Nebraska, and that's all cool, well and good, but we don't know what he has because, I mean, he had, what, 5 carries at the University of Nebraska? So there is that fact. I will say, though, just based on he was a preferred walk-on there, he's probably going to come in as a third string and get a lot of reps at the second string.
Yep.
And if he's good enough to do that, then you give Chase Morlock and you say, hey, look, you're only a sophomore. There's plenty of time for you because you're going to be the next in line. But it's a competition thing. I like what you're saying, though, because you don't know about Frazier. Morlock could be the 2, could be the 3 coming in, and then Darius Anderson didn't play at all last year with these freshmen coming in. Who knows? To me, it's the defensive line, and not so much out of the fact that – well, actually, no, I shouldn't take that back. It is because of what you said. There's a lack of depth, essentially, is what you're saying. They lost 5 of the 8 players they tended to rotate in on that defensive line, and NDSU's success defensively – was pertinent on how the defensive line played.
Yeah, I hesitate. You know, there's going to be a need at wide receiver, but I'm hesitant to go there because freshmen just traditionally do not contribute as wide receivers.
Traditionally, no, not at NDSU. And the wide receiver position outside of Ryan Smith, I'm pretty sure they didn't lose anybody outside of him. Maybe Nate Moody, and I think Trevor Gebhardt was a junior this year as well.
Right. Yeah. But again, there's a lot of catches available with the
footballs go around.
Yeah, I tend not to go line just because almost all of the guys coming in on either line need at least 1 year with Jim Cramer.
Yep. That's a good point. Able,
I mean, that's what you're saying on the D-line makes a lot of sense.
You got to come in ready physically.
And that's nearly impossible. Almost never happens.
Knowledge-wise, you may come in and know football and get it, but physically, we got to add 20 pounds to you.
Yep.
And we got to add strength and speed, and we got to do a lot of things with you before you're even ready.
Yeah. So that's why I hesitate a little bit on D-line and linebacker, too.
Another dark horse one would be tight end, because they lost Taylor Nelson. Kevin Vaudelin came back. Got lucky there if you're NDSU, because that's an addition to your offensive line.
Yes,
essentially,
and that's kind of why I'd shy a little bit away from tight end, because again, it's a line position, and you got to get that muscle, you got to get that strength. So, as a general rule, I would tend to say either defensive backfield or running back are kind of my two defaults, unless you think that there's going to be either a backup quarterback or a starting quarterback coming in, which obviously isn't the case with this group. So I running back is where I go with it.
According to, and I'll give credit where credit's due, bisonnation.info, 20 verbals, and I think a 21st just came across not too long ago for NDSU's signing class. We'll see, North Dakota kids included. This is half climbing, half bulls class.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it's probably 3/4 bulls class still. Because there wasn't really a lot of people coming because of Bull leaving. A couple, but nothing too significant where they lost half their recruiting class. So this won't be indicative on how good of a recruit and how good of a recruiting system Kleiman has put together. Although, you could read into the fact that since not a lot of them left, I think NDSU is starting to get recruits recruited to commit to the program more so than the coaching staff, which is, it's a good indication for me. And for fans, it should be, too, that this program has reached that level where you're getting kids going, I want to go to NDSU.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter who's coaching. Kind of the same thing that goes on.
It matters one of the guys from the staff, I think.
And that helped, too. Yeah. But, I mean, it gets to the point they go, I want to go to Texas because it's Texas. They want to go so far, so on, whatever. We'll move on from there. Names get announced on Wednesday. Press conference being held there. Let's get on to
regional.
A couple questions here. First one, Seattle Seahawks, big Super Bowl champions, so on and so forth. Kind of like that term today. Percy Harvin trade was a mistake by the Vikings.
I'd say that for the course of this season, I think it was a huge success for the Vikings.
Why?
Because you traded an injury-prone player and got 3 draft picks out of it. Yeah, he's a dynamic player. Do you really think the Seahawks aren't Super Bowl champions if Percy Harvin doesn't play?
It's a good point.
I mean, you know, he made one run and had the kick return for the touchdown when they were already up 3 touchdowns.
It essentially put the game away.
I would say that the Seahawks win pretty handily without Percy Harvin. And he was hurt all year. They sold him at his top value. Got the maximum amount out of it. So I wouldn't say I'm about to go Dan Dierdorf here. I don't think you can look at the Super Bowl and what he did in that game and all of a sudden forget that, oh, yeah, he didn't play at all this season. He took 7, 20, 30 snaps, something like that.
Something of that nature. It wasn't a large amount.
No. So
He was hardly on the field, really.
Yeah, I would say that the trade is still a very good one for the Vikings.
Now, the Vikings ended up getting...
They got a first, a seventh, and
first a... First and a seventh in last year's draft, and then mid-round one in this year's draft. Yeah. Now, they ended up getting Xavier Rhodes with Seattle's pick.
Yep.
And then from New England via another trade, and I forget what all that entitled, but they ended up getting Cordarrelle Patterson from New England in the other one, and then the final one they ended up coming up with was... Sharif Floyd, which was their first pick anyways. Regardless, Xavier Rhodes, decent season, but again, the Vikings were awful in general.
Yep.
Cordarrelle Patterson, the best of those three.
Yep.
But there wasn't really a lot of this conversation coming from Vikings that, boy, these two first-rounders were a bust. There were good things. There was need for growth.
They were rookies.
Exactly. So,
but they showed some promise. So I still think that the trade's a big win for Minnesota.
I agree, and I didn't like the fact that, oh, look, you know, Viking fans going to Twitter last night and reacting to Percy Harvin returning a kick. You know, it's okay. Cordell Patterson had a better season. Percy Harvin is injury prone.
Yes.
And that's something you just don't tend to get over.
For those of you who are screaming at your computer, radio, whatever, your car that you're listening, however you're listening to this, yes, I understand that the previous year he did stay healthy, but migraines and everything else, you know, and then he has hip surgery. They sold him at the right time when you could say, look, look, he's healthy the whole year. Look how dynamic he was. He was great. Forget about those other years. Look what he did. They sold him at the right time, and they got, I think, about as much as you were going to get out of him. And I think they did a great job with that.
Now, next year, if all three of those first-rounders go down with an injury and their mid-round pick from this year just stinks and Percy Harvin has 1,000, 1,500 yards receiving with 20 touchdowns, which he won't, but, you know, the more people will be jumping on and say, oh, it's a bad trade, it's a bad trade. It's a good trade.
It's a good trade for the Vikings.
That's what I think, too.
Yeah.
First question of the Minnesota Twins we're going to ask. February, pitchers and catchers report shortly. I believe it's the 16th. I believe is when they report, maybe a little bit later. Doesn't matter. Well, no, it doesn't matter. We're going to start some topics here in the month of February as we approach spring training. Just some off-season topics, and then we'll let it be and let spring training be what it is, and then we'll make our predictions as the season comes around. My first question, though, of the Minnesota Twins February offseason is biggest offseason move the Twins made this season.
You've got a list. A mental list, at least.
I've got a mental list, at least. Was it the signing of Phil Hughes and Ricky Nolasco? Was it the signing of Kurt Suzuki and Jason Kubel? Or was it the move of Joe Mauer from behind the plate to first base?
Given those choices, gosh, those are all terrible. For as far as a big move goes for a team that is not very good, I guess if you made me pick, I'd probably say Kubel, because he at least can maybe get the ball out of the park, give him a little pop in the middle of the lineup, but I don't feel good about it.
Okay. I'm going to say Mauer, and it's a bigger move than you would assume, because what you're doing is you're adding a month of games of him playing now. Because instead of him just playing 120 to 130 at the top end, you've opened up the availability for him to potentially play 150 games in a season.
Yeah.
That's a month worth of games for a guy who hits 320, 330. Now, the production around the rest of the lineup has to pick up. And that includes everybody. Doesn't matter.
Yep.
The signing of Jason Kubel is big because they signed him for cheap, even to a minor league deal, but if he returns to the form that he should, which is a power hitter, next thing you know, you got a guy who can pop 20 homers out of the park in the middle of your lineup for cheap, which is huge. Thrifty move by the Twins. They're the thrift shop team of the major leagues. To me, the Joe Mauer move is big just in the fact that not only does it allow that, but Josemil Pinto, a guy who came in last year and did a great job while Joe Mauer was out for the remaining of the season, he's a guy, he's a catcher that could come up and potentially produce for 120 games. And Kurt Suzuki backs that up offensively. Yeah. Looks good.
Nolasco, to me, would be the second one on the list, just because, good gracious, do those boys need some pitching. I probably should, because you got to have some sort of pitching, and they just haven't had it. But, yeah, I mean, at least, I don't think this team's going to win, so at least give me a couple of power hitters that might give me a chance to see something fun, see a home run every now and then.
Yeah, and everything's, you got to sell hope. You got to hope this guy returns to this guy goes to there. The other part of it is, which we'll address probably next week, but it's the youth of this team. And is there going to be a need or an urgency or a sense of urgency to rush some guys early? There's talk about Miguel Sano possibly, if he has a great spring training and a great camp, making this roster out of Fort Myers, which would be insane. But he's got the best chance of anybody. Miguel Sano is like the fourth-rated prospect in all of Major League Baseball. He played Double-A baseball last year. While his average wasn't that great, his power numbers kind of stayed steady. And they say that Double-A to the major leagues is not that big a difference for hitters. They say that because a lot of the people in Triple-A are kind of there for rehab assignments, or they've been brought down because your major league roster is so
stocked.
You
see a lot of jump between that.
Right.
Yeah. The one thing I'd want to look at before saying whether or not that's a good or a bad idea is, it does that, would they, is there a certain amount of time they could leave him in the minors for and keep an extra year of control on the back end?
Yeah, contract-wise. Yeah, I understand that.
Because you don't bring him up this year because he's just, they're not going anywhere this year. I'd rather keep that year on the other side.
I understand that, but
I know what you're saying.
Unless he just does so good that you can't ignore it. So that'll be a question we'll ask.
I can ignore it. Tampa Bay ignored a lot of things, and that's what got them to the point they're at now. Just ignore it. It's fine. Just ignore it.
Just ignore it. It'll go away.
Yeah.
All right. We'll move on to
National
Super Bowl 48. Winner of the Super Bowl, Seattle Seahawks. Final score was 43-8.
That doesn't make sense.
Seahawks win. The safety in there, and then the
It just doesn't make sense. 43-8.
Five field goals. Yeah, it was weird. By the way, there was a guy. The Broncos scored right before the end of the third quarter, and he's on one of these squares, one of these big boards. Yeah. And his numbers were 6 and 7.
Okay.
So it was 36-0. Broncos scored, and he starts freaking out. He's like, I just won $100. I just won whatever.
They go for two.
And then I'm like, you know they're going to go for two. He's like, no, they're not. I said, dude, they're down a ton. They're going to go for two here. What? They're going for two. Shut the... And there was just a bunch of explicitives. Just bad words just flying out of his mouth. Explicitives? Well, what's the word then, wordsmith?
Expletives.
Expletives.
Yeah. Not explicitives. Expletives.
He was explicit in his language. How's that then? I'm going to get explicit in my language if you don't shut up.
Oh, goodness.
My God, are you still talking?
No, I was just laughing.
Anyways.
Oh, goodness.
Oh.
My communication degree is doing you really well.
Yeah, it helps. Was this... Oh, boy. What happened?
Back on track here. Come on, you're hosting this thing.
Was this the worst Super Bowl ever, or did you take something away from this?
Well, I mean, there's always something to take away from it, no matter how good or bad. I mean, was the game... I mean, the game was pretty bad. I mean, it wasn't...
Well, it was one-sided.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it depends, I guess, on what your definition of good or bad is. And from when you don't have a horse in the race, in my perspective, one-sided is bad. And it's not that one team just played that much better. The Broncos played awful.
Yes.
And so that puts it up there as far as worst Super Bowls for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I picked it right. I had Seattle. So, I mean, that part... I was disappointed, though, because I wanted to see Peyton Manning win. And this game will go on his whatever the legacy talk, and we can get into that. His play in the two Super Bowls, it's regardless of what you think, and I think a fifth MVP and the way he played this season is more positive than negative, even though you've got that sour taste in your mouth after this game. I think this season was much more a net positive than a negative. It's still on there. He was one of the greatest of all time. He's got a Super Bowl MVP. He put up the most decorated quarterback season at that time. But he did not play well in the Super Bowl, and his team got its doors blown off
right
by the Seahawks. I mean, that's it's on there. It's there.
Now, I do have a question that we'll talk about coming up, but just let me read some stats, because if we go down this legacy talk that I just hate, his legacy is going to be defined by what he does in the playoffs. No, it's not. He is one of the greatest players, if not the greatest quarterback of all time. He's led the league in completions 4 times. He's led the league in completion percentage twice. He's led the league in yards 3 times. He's led the league in touchdowns 4 times. He's has 167 wins as a quarterback.
Yeah, I get all that. He's going to go down as the greatest regular season quarterback of all time.
No, you got to put away the whole playoff regular season bit.
Why?
Because it's a team game. You're good at your position. Greatest quarterback in the history of the game, Peyton Manning. Yeah, possibly he'll be up for that conversation. But if it was anything proved last night, if your offensive line sucks, how good are you at as a quarterback? If your running game isn't there, how good are you as a quarterback? I'm not saying Peyton Manning was, you know, not at fault at any of this, but you got to put the blame around to other people as well.
That's true, but we've had this discussion a few times over the past month, but at the same time, you're still the most important guy on the field. And that means that when when your team isn't even competitive, that's a chunk of that's got to be on you, because you gave up a safety, you had to punt it away, your defense held them to a field goal, and you know what, when your offense came back in the field, what did you do? Nothing.
Oh yeah, I'm not saying last night's Super Bowl wasn't any of his fault. There are a lot of things that go where he said, I could have done this, this, and this better.
Yeah.
But still, to win games, because that's what everybody's going to say. Well, he's 11 and whatever in the playoffs, won Super Bowl, 1-2 in Super Bowls. Yes, but to win games, you need a complete team effort. It doesn't just happen because you're going to throw for 500 yards. Sometimes you need to be able to balance it out. You need your defense to show up. You could throw for 500 yards and 5 touchdowns. If your defense gives up 550 yards and 6 touchdowns, guess what? Lost the game.
Okay, that's fine. And in that case, then he gets a little bit of a pass. That's not what happened.
Not this game, but in
a lot of his career.
Of
yes, throughout in the playoffs, he's not done it. And you're talking to one of the biggest Peyton Manning fans, and I want Peyton Manning to be able to go down as the best quarterback of all time, because there's no quarterback that I've enjoyed watching more than Peyton Manning. But it's going to be there, and the playoffs are what you play. You don't play to put up yards. You don't play to put up touchdowns. You play to win the game. If Herm Edwards taught us anything, you play to win the game. And in the playoffs, in a lot of cases, he hasn't done enough and hasn't played well. It's one thing if in all those playoff losses you could say, look what he did. He put up 350 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, and he did everything he could for his team to win the game. And that's not what's happened in the playoffs. It just isn't.
You know, looking at some of these games, especially in the last few years, I mean, the 2 interceptions, you can't forgive that. 280 yards and a touchdown in a loss to Baltimore last year. 290 yards and 3 touchdowns.
I wouldn't put that Baltimore game on him. He did what he needed to do to win that Baltimore game. That one's not on him.
Loss against New Orleans, 333 yards, touchdown. He had the big interception, which turned for a pick, but even so, threw for a ton of yards, completed nearly 70% of his passes. Lost to San Diego back in 08, 310 yards, a touchdown. A loss to San Diego again in 2007, 402 yards, 3 touchdowns. He's doing what he has to do in some of these games. Not in all of them, I get it. But when you look at it and go, well, his playoff legacy is going to be... No, it's not. And get off that. And get off that for every player. I don't want to single it out by just Peyton Manning. But it would be almost unbelievable to me to think that if Joe Montana or Troy Aikman or John Elway didn't have the type of playoff runs they had, they would never be considered as great quarterbacks. People and Troy Aikman may be a little different.
We're not talking about great quarterbacks, though. These guys are all great quarterbacks.
But you're putting them at different positions of, well, he's above here because he won Super Bowls. You know, Dan Marino didn't have a great defense. Did he have a running back at all? Did he have a running attack? No, he didn't have a balanced offense. He was the guy. You can only take a team so far.
Do you have
any
idea how good the Dolphins' defenses were?
Back in when he was playing?
Yeah.
I can't imagine they were great.
I mean, just I don't know. But I would want to take a look at that. And you know, you can bring up Dan Marino, and that's fine. I honestly didn't watch a lot of Marino, but and he's obviously what he did was phenomenal and throws one of the best balls ever. But it has to matter a little bit. Otherwise you're saying there's an individual player doesn't have responsibility for wins and losses in the playoffs.
Not in football. To me, it's so much of a team sport. In basketball, all right, I'll give you that. The individual can carry you quite a long way to NBA titles, if you will. 2 players is better than 1, obviously, but you've seen 1 player just go on an incredible tear. I would say Dwayne Wade, back in like 06, had just an unbelievable playoff series. Shaquille O'Neal was kind of a shell of himself at this point. He wasn't the Shaquille O'Neal of the Lakers. He helped, but he wasn't the same. Dwayne Wade had an unbelievable run.
Yeah.
That, to me, is the kind of guy where you go, yeah, okay, that makes sense. In basketball, sure. In baseball, yeah, you get to the playoffs because your team does well throughout the season. But if you have 1 pitcher in a 5-game series, in a 7-game series even, that's good enough to win a World Series.
But in football,
it's not because Michael Strahan has just an unbelievable 1 game. It's a Super Bowl because 5 sacks is 5 plays. It's not the other 55. You know, you can have a great individual game, but you need the rest of your team to show up is what I'm saying. And that's how Super Bowls are won. It's not just on one player. Not in the Super Bowl.
And
not in football.
And honestly, Seattle had the better team, and that's fine. But again, if you come out and you don't perform the way that you're capable of, and you can say, you can point to 280 yards in the Super Bowl for Peyton Manning. How many of those yards were when the game didn't matter anymore?
A lot of those games. Well, a lot of those games are close even still.
That one sure wasn't.
Not the one last night, no. But again, it's this thought process that
wins and losses matter do not matter at all for the player that has the most control over the game of anyone. I think that argument you're basically saying I'm not going to put blame on any player for a win and a loss. And a quarterback, there's a reason that's the most important position on the field.
I'll put some blame on him, but I'm not going to put a majority of the blame people want to put on Peyton Manning for losing this game. I get he's the most high-profile player out there.
Yeah.
He's the only one on Denver that anybody knows about. I mean, that gets all the publicity. Sure, Wes Welker, Demaryius Thomas, Eric Decker, so be it. But Peyton Manning receives all the credibility. I understand it because it is the quarterback position. But in the end, it's the fact that we put so much of the blame or the success on Peyton Manning,
Quarterbacks
Drew Brees,
in general.
Yeah, quarterbacks in general, but that's just not the case. Because was it Tony Romo's fault that the Cowboys didn't make the playoffs this year, or is it the fact that he had the worst defense in league history?
Okay,
I mean, those are legitimate arguments. There are a lot of things that go into a football game because there's 22 players on the field at once. It's a lot different between football and other sports, and I understand there being some blame on different players, and I get that the quarterback maybe take a little bit more blame, but this whole legacy bullcrap that says that Peyton Manning's lost some of his luster because he loses in the playoffs.
I don't know that he really lost anything.
Well,
off
the
of his
fact
legacy,
that we may think of him as a lesser player because he didn't win a Super Bowl.
I don't think of him as a lesser player, but I think he had the opportunity to gain something by coming out and having a great game in the Super Bowl. I don't know that he was going to lose anything from this game, but he certainly had the opportunity to gain and he didn't do it.
Here's one guy I'm going to put out there that explains the whole thing behind why we give too much credit to a quarterback and maybe we should give more credit to a team in general.
I'm already yawning at this, by the way, because you can pick out an extreme example to me and somehow make that your point and anything.
Okay. Joe Namath is a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Joe Namath was not a great quarterback. He had one great game and one great promise, and he was more of a star than a quarterback.
That is the kind of takeaway that I take from stuff like that, is that the NFL, the fans, and even to the media to some point, look at the quarterback position and go, Joe Namath had a great game. We should put him in the Hall of Fame. He was not a Hall of Fame quarterback. He wasn't.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that.
I think a quarterback that should be in a Hall of Fame or should be considered, guy like Warren Moon or Randall Cunningham, even Steve McNair to a point, who played better than Joe Namath ever did in their career. But because they were never given the opportunity or never were on teams long enough or
isn't Warren Moon a Hall of Famer?
Warren Moon might be,
okay.
So I can take that back. But Randall
incredible.
Cunningham had some incredible seasons, heck of a passer. He was one of the first kind of quarterbacks that you're able to look at and go, okay, he can run and he can pass, along with Steve Young. You look at what Randall Cunningham did throughout his career, probably better than Joe Namath. He had Joe Namath in the Hall of Fame. Why? Oh, because he won a Super Bowl. Yes, it's the biggest game of your season, I understand, but you get there through team success. Or you win it through team success.
But when you're the biggest reason for your team's success because you are the most important player on the field, that has to matter.
Have I said it doesn't?
That's pretty much the argument you've been making, yeah.
No, I'm saying it doesn't matter as much as people want to make it out to that it matters.
Okay, and that's fine.
That's the whole point behind my argument, is that people just take the quarterback. Joe Namath is the best example I can come up with. Peyton Manning is going to be two and go, well, he was 1-2 the Super Bowl, so he's not as good as everybody thinks. That's in 5 years from now. People are going to say, I want to start a team. I'll start with Joe Montana. Joe Montana, great teams. You look at Joe Montana's stats, he's not a great quarterback, but he's not a better quarterback at the position than Dan Marino or Peyton Manning or Drew Brees even. Sure, he got it done when it mattered. That's great. But so did Seattle's defense. Okay. There's not going to be anybody on that team that's going to go, that defense that's going to go to the Hall of Fame,
but
unless they have amazing
careers.
But listen
to what you said. Sure, he got it done when it mattered. That's great. Yeah, that's why you play the game.
But it doesn't mean that it makes him better than somebody else just because he got it done in the Super Bowl.
And you're probably you're measuring better different. I mean, I think you could make the argument that better means playing well in a big game. That consistently playing well in the biggest games is what matters.
I just don't. It's an overall career arc. You got to get to that point by playing on good teams.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's not playing on 9-7 teams and then getting into the playoffs and then losing. It's if you're consistently the number one seed and you're the Atlanta Braves of football, there's achievement is set based on what you've done in the regular season, and based on that throughout Peyton Manning's career. In that sense, if the goal is to win a championship and you consistently go in with a record and the numbers saying that you're the best and you're not finishing the year as the best, that matters.
Not as much as people want to make it out to be. You got to look at the team. In football, you have to look at the team. I'm sorry. Just because it's the quarterback that has the ball every single play on offense doesn't mean he's the main reason that they lost a game.
Not this one. But
not a lot of games. Not a lot of games.
His teams did not put up very many points in a lot of those games. And guess what? You're responsible for that. You're responsible for putting up points when you're the quarterback.
If it's a 50-50, you run 50% of the time, pass 50% of the time, then is it on him too? Or is it on the running game,
when
the offensive line?
Especially with Peyton Manning, when he's the one pretty much calling the plays at the line of scrimmage, yeah, it is.
But when you
more than anybody else, because he's calling the plays
even
on top of it.
But the other part that comes up with it is, what about protection on the offensive line? How was it game in and game out? You can't just discard that. You can't just go, well, it's Peyton Manning's fault. Guy had like 2 seconds here, 3 seconds to throw. Well, 3 seconds a lot, but they had 2 seconds here, second and a half to get rid of the ball there. If the offensive line doesn't play well, it's a quarterback's fault. But we totally disregard the fact that the offensive line maybe just got blown off the ball by a certain team. There are too many factors that go into being good as a football team that, to me, you just can't ignore.
There's a ratio there, and you're making an argument because you're trying to make a point that it's too far. You're arguing it too far the other side, though. There's a middle ground there, and the argument that you're presenting, I don't know that is the argument that you mean. The argument you're presenting is you're trying to minimalize and saying that all of these losses, when Peyton Manning did not play well in the playoffs and when his team put up 14, 17 points.
I'm not saying all of them, but I'm saying there's probably a vast majority. We just don't know what went wrong. We haven't gone back and looked at the tape. If we go back and look at the tape, and every single one is Peyton Manning throwing bad passes and dumb calls and bad reads, all right. But I'd be willing to venture a guess that some of those games the defense didn't play well. Some of the games the offensive line was bad. Sure, there are games where Peyton Manning goes, yeah, that was my bad. I had the opportunity. I had the throws. I just didn't make them. But there are just so many times in football where you go, the defense needed to make a play there. They didn't. The offensive line needed to hold here, do a better job of blocking. They didn't. The run game was non-existent because the offensive line couldn't block, or the running back just wasn't hitting the holes hard enough. Too many factors. Too many factors just to do that. We got to move on. I don't think either of us are going to move from our argument here. Now, the question becomes, after this game for me, if you're a GM, you just saw the Seattle Seahawks dominate the number one offense of the game, does that change your line of thinking when you're building a team? Does it make you go, okay, what we need right away is to build up a really good defense and we'll deal with the quarterback as it comes along? Or does it make you say, we need a good quarterback right now and then the rest will fall into place?
I think you got to build defense first. And I think that's been proven pretty consistently over the last number of years that a quarterback's going to get you there. He's going to put you in a position to do it, but the better defenses win games.
Seattle proved it. There's no doubt about that.
Yep.
I think Carolina proved it to a point, too, where they said we had a quarterback good enough, decent enough to move the ball, mm-hmm. get us some points. Our defense is going to be the cornerstone of what we do.
Yeah.
Then to me, it's Dallas is a prime example. All the offensive firepower in the world. Can't stop a thing.
Yeah.
8-8. That's how good you are. Again, Saints are another prime example, too. Unbelievable offense. Just enough defense to get them in the playoffs. Just not a good enough defense to stop anybody.
Yeah.
So it is a prime example, but the problem is for fans, they don't have patience. And even owners to a certain point don't have patience because a defense just doesn't happen overnight. You know, you look at Seattle's defense, a lot of that roster has been made up of guys that were drafted in like 09 and 10. It's taken 4, 3, 5 years to get to the defense and free agents and all that. It takes a little time. Have a little faith. But people don't want that.
Yeah.
People want the Johnny Manziel or the Teddy Bridgewater or the Peyton Manning, if you will, to come in and save, you know, wins in the regular season to them is kind of what they're hoping for after a bad regular season. But to win championships.
And I think that's part of it is, you know, what team are we talking about here? If you're and coming from having been a Vikings fan, and I guess still to a certain extent, although not as much as I once was, I don't care about, you know, having a good playoff team or, oh yeah, we're going to go 10-6 and maybe win a game in the playoffs. Been there, seen that, saw that for a lot of years, and it just doesn't really interest me anymore as a Vikings fan. I want a championship. So I'm willing to have a little bit of patience if you're going to spend those draft picks on defensive guys and build that up. If you are, Jacksonville? You know what? Give me a quarterback and a guy who's maybe going to be worth some wins in the regular season, but the team may not be enough to win a championship. You know what? Give me just a little bit of entertainment. Cleveland? You know what? I'm going to take, give me some regular season wins and get me to the playoffs. And you know what? I might be okay with that.
There are some differential circumstances here. You know, Vikings is, quarterback, we don't care because at this point it's just been so bad. And I get fans are going to want to go that route. In the Browns, it just doesn't matter. I mean, just give me somebody that is relevant that we can sell jerseys and sell tickets.
But that's the thing. The Vikings have been a contender in the last 5 years. Throughout the 90s, early 2000s, they were a good team. And I just don't know that there's the interest there of, oh yeah, you know what? Put together another one of those teams. Yeah. No, I think we're about ready due for a title now. Let's go ahead and build that defense up and kind of fill in the pieces at that point.
We'll move on from there. And the next question I have for you is All-Star Stub. NBA!
Yeah.
I have a lot of exclamation points.
You really do.
Who is your All-Star snub?
You know, honestly, because if the thing with snubs is, if you're going to go snub, that means you got to take somebody who's on the roster off.
Well, that's easy for me for both squads, but
for both squads?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Get rid of Dwayne Wade, get rid of Kobe Bryant.
Well, okay. I mean, and it depends what are you looking to accomplish with this with the All-Star team?
I'm looking to accomplish a full-rounded team.
Oh, I don't a full-rounded team. It's an exhibition game. Who cares? You can make reasonable arguments for, I think, two ways of looking at the All-Star
team.
All
right, what are your reasonable arguments?
The reasonable argument can be either, I want to recognize the 12 best players in each conference of this season. Because when you look back historically and you're trying to figure out how good a player is, you point to, well, this guy made 7 All-Star teams. That's pretty darn good. He obviously had a better career than the guy who made 2 or 3 All-Star teams. Okay, I think that's one way to look at it. So we want it to be the most representative of the 12 best players from each conference in that season.
Okay.
Or it's a freaking exhibition game, and we want to see the players. It should be for the fans, and we want to see the players who are gonna make this fun to watch, who are the most skilled players. But there's an element of that. You know what? Kobe Bryant's fun to watch play basketball, so I want to see him on there.
Okay.
So I think those are the two ways to look at it.
Kobe's not going to play anyways.
Exactly. So you name him to the All-Star team, fine. He's going to be bumped off. So to me, that really doesn't do it for me. I mean, The best guy that you can make for the Western Conference would be the guy who would be the next man up would be probably Goran Dragic from Phoenix. And he'll get in if Kobe doesn't play. But I don't really see a snub per se on there.
On the Western side?
Yeah.
What about DeMarcus Cousins?
I don't care for him.
But again,
he's been really good this year, though.
22 points a game.
Yeah.
Let me check out his stats here. You look at that, 22 points a game, 11 rebounds per game.
I mean, give me some Boogie. You can't tell me that Boogie's not going to make the All-Star game more fun.
And you can't tell me that he hasn't. Yeah, exactly. You can't tell me he hasn't deserved it.
Yep.
To me, that would be a guy I'd look at. I understand Goran Dragic, pardon me.
Because, I mean, it does feel a little sad that, hey, after what Phoenix has done, that they're not somehow represented. It feels like they should be.
Right.
Because they've been phenomenal.
Blazers are represented well by Aldridge and Lillard.
Yep.
I know the East is a little bit different. DeMar DeRozan got in for the Raptors, which it's kind of the same thing. The West should have had somebody in for Phoenix because they were so surprising. I think the Raptors got somebody because they have been so surprising this year in the East. Should it have been DeRozan, though, is my question.
Yeah, you're bringing up Kyle Lowry, and honestly, you could make an argument that Kyle Lowry, if you're going to talk about a snub, and I don't know that, I wouldn't necessarily call it a snub, but there's an argument that Kyle Lowry should be there ahead of Joe Johnson.
Yes. 16.8 points per game, but then you also have the 7.6 assists per game and the 4.3 rebounds. He's 6 foot, by the way, and he's getting 4.3 a game as a guard.
I could see that, but honestly, if I'm Joe fan sitting back watching an All-Star game, who am I going to be more excited to see on the court? Joe Johnson, who I know might start bombing it from 30 feet and can hit there.
Right.
Or Kyle Lowry.
Exactly. No, I get that.
So
I understand
that. If you're going the merit-based of the season, I'll give you Lowry over Johnson. That from, again, depending on which of the two point of views you're looking at.
I'd almost make an argument, just because I want to see you freak out at this, for Ricky Rubio. Just because he's so good at he's a great, not great. Don't say great. It's a heavy word. He's a good point guard this year, and it's one of his better years.
He's a good point guard and a great passer.
Yes. There we go.
I would say he's an average point guard, actually. Good might be a little strong because
he can't score. He's shooting.
When
he's
you're
shooting.
The worst shooter, having the worst shooting season in the history of the NBA, I'm sorry, I can't even give you good. You can be decent because your passing is good enough for that.
And he steals a lot.
But there's an argument to be made, and I think, I'd be borrowing this from a Simmons column from back in the day, that he made an argument that as long as they can both move up and down a court, Steve Nash and Jason Kidd should always be point guards because they're just going to find players and put them in positions to make some pretty big plays.
I think Ricky Rubio's the same way.
So would he make that game fun? Would it be fun to see Rubio's passing in the All-Star game? Yes. But yeah, you'd have to create a 13th position because you can't take anybody.
Yeah,
off
not at this point.
You'd have to have a designated passer.
Yeah, and he would be the guy.
Yeah,
Toronto, my team, half game out of that third spot in the East, almost two games up on Washington and Chicago for the fourth spot. They're playing good. One of the better defensive teams in the Eastern Conference right now, behind Chicago and Indiana. They're a better defensive team than Miami. Offensively,
for now.
But it's fun. The NBA is going to start to heat up here now, especially without the NFL. The other thing, and the last question we'll have that's going to heat up, is college basketball. Gosh. Pick three teams, two from a major conference, one from mid-major, to follow from here until the end of the season for them.
Yeah, that's an interesting question because, again, you can take that a number of different ways. One team that I will say to follow is going to be Kansas.
Okay.
Because I think you can look at it from a few different ways. I think you look at it from, they have the potential to do some damage in the playoff, in the tournament, but you also got, you got two guys who are going to be in the NBA next year, and I want to see how good they are.
Okay.
So I would put Kansas on there for those two reasons. I would like to say Michigan State, but I don't know how how entertaining their brand of basketball is going to be.
Right.
Even though I think they're right now they're my pick to win it all. So I would say no to them. And I would say I'm going to give a pity vote to Arizona just because, come on, watch something out west.
Okay. Now, who's your mid-major?
There's, you know, you're looking at the top 25. They're darted all over the place.
They are.
And that's it's kind of fun to see. If we're going to go a mid-major, give me McDermott.
They're not a mid-major.
Creighton?
They're a Big East school.
What? When did that happen?
That happened this year. Mm. And I knew that was going to come up.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
they were in the Missouri Valley, but they moved to the Big East because they play teams like St. John's and Villanova. And
I've been watching football. Give me a break.
Providence. So they're a Big East school. Sorry.
Yeah, that's not good.
Now, here's some schools that I will give you that are mid-majors.
I mean, you got
Gonzaga,
St. Louis. You got
St.
the
Louis.
Zags. You got Wichita State, obviously.
Wichita State and San Diego State.
Yeah, give me San Diego State. They're fun. Again, Steve Fisher's just fun. I enjoy his teams.
Now, if I'm watching, I'm going to watch Wichita State to see if they can go undefeated throughout the rest of the regular season into the NCAA tournament. Watching Wichita State, I'm watching Villanova, frankly, because I'm really curious to see how that goes for them at 19-2. One of their losses, though, looking at the 30-point loss to Creighton. But that was when Creighton just knocked down a ton of threes.
Yeah, I remember that game. They were up like 40 at one point in the first half. It was
right.
insane.
It was just a ridiculous amount. The other one that I want to watch for is Cincinnati.
Okay.
Cincinnati out of the, what is it now, the American League or the American, I don't know, it's called something
Whatever
dumb.
Used to be the
American,
Big East.
Yeah, the American. They're 10-0 in the conference. That includes wins against a lot of good teams. They lost to Xavier in New Mexico this year. They got dominated by Xavier, actually, but beat Memphis, beat Louisville, have a one tonight against Kentucky, or no, not tonight, in 3 days against Kentucky. They have a stretch from February to March where they play Louisville, Connecticut, and Memphis. Yeah. I say Kentucky, I meant Connecticut. That will kind of tell where they're at, but the Americans got four ranked teams. They're one of them and the best at 10-0 in the American.
Sure.
They're going to be a team to watch because defensively, they're a really, really good team. They don't score a lot of points. They're only giving up, you know, they're only scoring 70 points a game, but defensively, they're allowing 56 points a game. Fourth best in the country.
Random comment just to troll some people out there. Hearing anybody saying how horrible it is that Syracuse moved on to the ACC after their game against Duke. Funny how that chatter died down.
So yeah, that was one of the most hyped games in college basketball history.
It lived up to it.
It did, and I didn't get to see a thing of it because I was working. I work on weekends, unfortunately. So, well, that was a good podcast. A lot of good discussions. They're all good podcasts. What am I saying? So,
of course.
Make sure
there's been 30 of them.
I know, 30. Make sure we're 30 years old. You feel old. Make sure and comment on the comment section underneath the podcast page when we post this on kfjo.com. Find us on iTunes. The Pinto and White Shadow Show. Find us on Facebook. Find us on Twitter. I'm at PintoKFGO. Brad Jones is
at the Bison Guy.
Email us pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com and we'll respond to those emails. No comments or questions today, but we're always willing and welcome to accept those. So thank you so much for listening and have a wonderful rest of your day. Hey!